Hello, everybody, and welcome to a beautiful, freezing cold Thursday morning here in New York. Wherever you are, I hope you're staying warm, and I'm so happy to be with you for the next hour. First, I'd like to just start off by saying what a beautiful, moving speech our president gave on Monday. The inaugural speech was really beautiful, and I loved that he focused so much on climate change, and now we really need to hold him to that agenda. And when I say we, as just like he kept saying, we the people must rally together, either in the streets, writing letters, calling offices, whatever we need to do to hold him accountable to those words, because I truly believe that is what is in his heart. He wants to address climate change. He wants to address gun control. He wants to address the immigration laws. And we need to help him so that he has backing when he comes into Congress facing the House of Representatives and the Senate and has all that Republican opposition. He needs to be able to say, look, the people want this. And so we, the people, need to stand behind him and show how we feel. And we need all of us to get involved in doing this. It's a tireless, long, uphill battle. But if we don't all take it on, we will not have a future that we could be proud of for our children. And so we really, really need to take it on, whether we want to or not. We can start. I know the Sierra Club, who's never really done nonviolent demonstrations before, they are joining forces with 350.org, and on February 17th, there's going to be a big rally down in Washington, D.C., to protest the Keystone Pipeline. And if any of you saw in the New York Times yesterday, the governor from Nebraska just approved a new route for the Keystone Pipeline through his state. I mean, he had been opposed to the Keystone Pipeline because it was going to go through some aquifers and felt like it was unsafe. And so they found a new route that now the governor's saying is safe. And the reason he's saying it's safe, even though he knows that there's no way that it can really be safe, is because it's going to bring jobs to the area, and it's a depressed area, and they need the work. However, long-term, there is no safeguards. It doesn't matter what TransCanada says as far as their willingness to clean up any spills. We all know from history that oil spills don't clean up very easily, and that the destruction it does in its path is really unfixable, and it is the dirtiest oil on the planet, and it is just a no-win situation. And so instead of putting money into that, we need to put money into renewable energy and finding new resources, invest in wind, invest in solar, invest in geothermal. There's many different sources of energy that we could put money into. And as President Obama said, we need to be the leaders. I mean, right now, Germany is talking about having 50% of all of their energy coming from renewable sources by the year 2030. That's amazing. Why can't we do that? We have the capability to do that, but we have to make it a priority. And it's only going to be made a priority if all of us, we the people, let our president know that we're behind him and push for it. Because he, as you know, has a lot of opposition in Congress. And his agenda from the first 4 years, he didn't get very far with the things he set out to do. But his spirit is in the right place. If you watch him speak and if you look at his eyes and you hear his words, you can tell that he's being honest with his belief system. And his belief system, I think, is in line with most of ours. And so we have to push him to hold him accountable to those things. So there's lots of things coming up in the next few weeks in the city and around our area. The NOFA New York Winter Conference is this weekend from the 25th to the 27th in Saratoga Springs. It's at the Saratoga Hilton. So if you are free and you want to go up and schmooze with farmers and growers and foodies, that's the place to be. If you are not and you're in the city and you have children, at Century 21 on Sunday, there's going to be a great free concert from Super Sprouts. And Super Sprouts is a wonderful organization that has created puppets and superheroes, all based on our vegetables. And each vegetable, depending on whether it's good for your eyes or good for your mind, the different vegetable superhero takes on that attribute. So it's going to be from 11 to 1 at Century 21. It should be a lot of fun. So if you have kids and you want to have a fun thing to do indoors in this cold weather, that would be a great place to go. Again, I hope you will consider joining me on February 17th down in Washington. If you live in the local Long Island area, do get in touch with me at Bhavani@IEGreen. Send me an email that you want to go. And if we have enough people, maybe we can get a bus. Otherwise, I'm taking my van, so I have room for six others. Also, at the American Museum of Natural History, there's a great exhibit going on called Our Global Kitchen. Definitely worth seeing. The Just Food Conference is coming up March 29th to March 30th at the Food and Finance High School in the city. Buy your tickets. Last year they sold out. So buy your tickets ahead of time if you are interested in going. Also, there's lots of winter farmers markets around. Definitely worth looking into your local area. And you can find a list of winter farmers markets at localharvest.com. On Long Island, there's one in Huntington, one in Comac, one in Northport. And they're a great place to get vegetables and support your farmers throughout the winter. Slow Wine and Slow Food New York City is having an event on January 28th at 6:30 at 360 in New York City. And it is a tasting of more than 100 wines from over 15 regions in Italy. So if you are interested in that, you also would receive a complimentary copy of the brand new guide of Slow Wines. So if you're available, January 28th, that should be a fun thing to do. And then Slow Food Huntington, along with Food and Water Watch and New York is Against Fracking, we are having a screening of this great documentary film called Dear Governor Cuomo. And I went to the screening in the city last month of this movie, and it is just a lot of fun. It's almost like a Woodstock, you know, concert event, but with the theme of anti-fracking. And it's a really wonderful movie. It talks a lot about what fracking is, along with Natalie Merchant as our lead musician. Lots of musicians together, the Felice Brothers, Joan Osborne, all coming together to create music and to create a movement to let Governor Cuomo know that we do not want fracking in New York State. And as a matter of fact, on that note, please call Governor Cuomo's office in New York City and up in Albany and leave a message if you can't speak to one of their aides directly. Leave a message that you are opposed to fracking. They need to hear from us. Again, we the people are the ones that are going to make the difference. So please call Governor Cuomo, let him know that you do not support fracking in the state of New York. So all that is good stuff. I have a great show planned today. My guest is going to be Jared Koch. He is the founder of Clean Plates, and a couple of years ago he came out with a directory for Manhattan called Clean Plates Manhattan. That was a directory highlighting restaurants that were buying clean food, sourcing it responsibly, and, you know, it was a guide as to whether they had meat or vegan or vegetarian, gluten-free, all that. He now has come out with a Clean Plates cookbook, and he will be on my show in a little while. But before I invite him on, of course, I would like to share with you this week's recipe. And there's a little history behind it. This recipe is penne alla tofu carbonara. Now, penne carbonara, or spaghetti carbonara, is one of my husband's favorite foods from when he was younger and traveled in Italy. And it's not something you can easily find here. When you get a carbonara in this country, usually it's like an Alfredo sauce with bacon in it. And that's really not a traditional carbonara. Carbonara is a very dry sauce that just is made with egg and Parmesan cheese, and the egg actually cooks on the hot pasta. So it's not, has no cream in it at all. But most restaurants here make it like a cream sauce, and it just doesn't hit it for him. So I've made a traditional carbonara with him, except, of course, I'm not going to use the bacon. So I make some tofu bacon, which is, you know, something that I came up with years ago when I wanted to satisfy my craving for a BLT, since I no longer was eating bacon. This goes back many, many years. And then I served that BLT sandwich for years at a restaurant called Biteables on Broadway. I don't know if any of you remember that restaurant, by Broadway and Bleecker. I worked there for a couple years. So anyway, this penne alla tofu carbonara is a great one. The reason it's penne and not spaghetti is just that's what I had in the house. So, of course, you can use spaghetti or whatever pasta you have. You can also use... I use whole wheat pasta. You can also use brown rice pasta or an organic semolina pasta if you prefer. So you want to start with one block of organic firm tofu. Now, I want to highlight the organic because tofu that you get, you know, in Chinatown, it's just not the same unless you know that the soybeans they're using are organic. 90% of all the soybeans grown in this country are genetically modified. So it's really important that you get soybeans from the other 10%. So buy organic tofu and or any products that have soy in it. Make sure you're getting organic. The same goes for corn. So you're going to start with a half a block of extra firm tofu. I've been buying the sprouted tofu as well, just because if it's a sprouted grain, it's a little bit more nutritious. So I've been buying the sprouted organic extra firm tofu. Then you're going to make a mixture. I use a pie pan so that it has a little bit of an edge on it. A mixture of a quarter cup of nutritional yeast with a half a teaspoon of smoked paprika, a half a teaspoon of garlic powder, and a quarter teaspoon of white pepper. And you make a mixture of that. You're also going to want some tamari and some olive oil. And that's just for making the tofu bacon. And then to make the sauce, you're going to need 2 tablespoons of chopped shallots, 6 cloves of garlic chopped, 1/8 teaspoon smoked paprika, 1/4 teaspoon tamari, 1 cup fresh grated Parmesan cheese, 2 eggs, fresh parsley chopped, olive oil. You're going to start by slicing the tofu very thin and lay it out on a towel. Pat it dry and make that mixture with the nutritional yeast, the paprika, the garlic powder, and the pepper. And then you're going to bread the tofu in the nutritional yeast mixture. And you're going to coat the bottom of a heavy saucepan. I use my cast iron pan with some olive oil. And saute the tofu in the olive oil until crisp on one side. Turn it over and continue cooking on the other side until crispy. And when you're finished, you're going to sprinkle the tofu with tamari. And the whole pan is going to sizzle and get hot. And that's going to cook the tamari right onto the tofu. And that's what gives it the saltiness that is similar to the flavor from the bacon. And then you're going to remove that and lay it out on a paper towel to absorb the oil. And then you can repeat it with remaining tofu. And if you're doing it in a second round, you do have to clean out the pan in between. Otherwise, the tofu will burn. Then you're also going to bring a large stock pot of water to a boil. Excuse me. You're going to cook the pasta according to directions, and you want it al dente. And you want to time it so that the pasta is coming out and it's going to be hot right when the sauce is ready. So the pasta takes about 10 minutes or so to cook. So while the pasta is cooking, saute the shallots and garlic and olive oil for a few minutes, making sure it doesn't burn. Add the smoked paprika and the tamari and stir and remove that from the heat. And again, that's just giving the shallots and the garlic a little bit of saltiness from the tamari so that it has that reminiscence of bacon, because in real carbonara you would be cooking that in the fat from the bacon. So in a separate bowl, you're going to mix the 2 eggs and the Parmesan cheese together. You're going to drain the pasta when it's finished. Reserve 1/4 cup of the pasta water to add to the sauce if you need to thin it out. You're going to return the pasta to the large stock pot. Add the cooked shallots and garlic, and immediately mix in the egg and cheese mixture. It's important that the pasta is still hot, like I said, so that the egg will cook directly on the hot pasta. Then you're going to cut the tofu into strips and add strips of the tofu and fresh parsley into the dish. Transfer to a serving bowl and garnish it with Parmesan cheese and parsley, and then serve it immediately. and that is it. And it's a great dish. It's beautiful. As always, the recipe will be posted on the PRN.FM website. And you can also find it on my website, www.iegreen.com. Okay, so that is it. I hope you all try it out and enjoy it. My guest now is Jared Koch, and I'm very happy to tell you a little bit about him before he comes on. He's a graduate from the Institute of the Integrative Nutrition, and he also graduated from the Global Institute for Alternative Medicine in 2004. He's a health coach, nutritional consultant, and a certified yoga and meditation teacher. In 2011, Jared came out with his first book, Clean Plates Manhattan, which was a directory of places to eat in Manhattan with a guide to food quality, service, price, and most importantly, what type of food it serves, whether it's vegan, vegetarian, and gluten-free friendly, or predominantly meat. He expanded his guide to include Brooklyn and L.A. too. Now he's published his second book, Clean Plates Cookbook, with the help of Chef Jill Silverman-Hugh, where he brings his nutritional ideals into the kitchen. Jared believes in offering individuals and groups that are committed to living a more conscious, healthier lifestyle, the education, inspiration, resources, and support to be able to do that. So, Jared, are you with me?
I am here.
Great. I'm so glad you're able to join us today.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So a couple of years ago you were on when you came out with your first cookbook, not your first cookbook, but your first directory. And this new one is larger and includes lots of wonderful recipes as well. What's the definition of healthy for you? Because I know it's not the same as what a lot of people might think of when they think of healthy. What does healthy mean to you?
Sure. No, I think that's a great question. And I think that, you know, it's a conversation, that we need to be having more and more of. And I think so many people are confused. And I might hear so many times from people, you know, just, oh, I eat healthy. And then they start to tell me what they're actually eating. And, you know, it's definitely not. And so, I think the first thing to really think about is just that, kind of the core of my philosophy is something I call bioindividuality. And that just ultimately means that there's more than one right way to eat healthier. And so just, you know, a simple way to put it is what foods are going to be right for my body are likely going to be different than the foods that are right for your body and all of the listeners. And so what that means is, you know, what we all tend to do is start, you know, try to look out to the media or, you know, to kind of experts to find the perfect diet, the perfect way of eating. And there really is that doesn't exist. It's really what is perfect for your body. And so that really ultimately is what the definition of healthy is, what foods actually provide your body with what it needs to thrive ultimately. And so,
well, when
you
say bioindividuality, how does someone know what is best for their body?
Sure, of course, and that's always the obvious, you know, next question in terms of, you know, well, okay, if I believe in that, then, you know, how do I determine what's best? And, you know, there are more and more tests. There's no perfect testing out there, diagnostic testing to figure it out. I do think over the years there will be more and more stuff. But there are things you could do that help point you in the right direction if you want to go that route. But the simplest way to do it is just to really develop more awareness, paying more attention, and then just, you know, starting to really, you know, notice how you feel. And, you know, I mean, I think we all have more intuition and should trust our intuition more than we typically do. And so, you know, you just start to pay attention. And sometimes it helps to maybe, you know, go see someone like myself. I work with a lot of people and I help them kind of, you know, uncover what's not working for them and discover what does work for them. And so, but you just want to simply start paying attention. You know, so if you're getting certain symptoms, if you're getting gas, bloating, you know, digestive distress, if you're having rashes, if you're having low energy, you know, you just start to pay attention to how you feel after you eat different meals. And then, you know, as you're paying attention, then the next step is really just starting to experiment more. And so maybe that means taking a particular food out of your diet, like a gluten or a dairy or sugar, and seeing if there are changes. And so it's definitely a little bit of an effort, but you know, it's something that what happens is over time you start to really discover, you know, this like really healthier relationship to food, as you know, in addition to just finding the healthy foods that are right for you, because most of us have a dysfunctional relationship with food, and so by going through this process over time, you start to just really develop a much healthier relationship to food, which is, you know, if we really think about it, something we do, you know, pretty much multiple times a day, every day of our life, and so, you know, it would be nice to actually have that healthy relationship.
Right. Well, you know, for most people, you know, they've been eating the way they've been eating for so many years. It takes a long time for your body to get unhealthy with the food that you're eating. So it probably takes a long time for someone to really feel the effects of changing their diet. So,
in my experience, that's not necessarily true. I've seen it in myself, and I see it so often with my clients or just people I have conversations with. Sometimes just making simple positive changes, actually the body actually responds. It's, you know, pretty miraculously, very quickly. I was just speaking to this. I actually had a lunch meeting with somebody yesterday, and he was saying, like, he did this. He just started drinking a glass of water with lemon in the mornings, and he said he's just like astonished how just much better he feels by doing it. It's just like that one simple change. Well, you know, for some people, just simply adding more vegetables, more greens to your diet. You know, people just actually really will experience. But some of it's even psychological, so you just feel better about yourself because
right.
You're actually giving your body what it wants and needs. So I do think some of the benefits can happen pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, I know for a fact in the summer, because I grow so many tomatoes, my husband will eat tomato almost for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He just can't get enough of them.
Yeah.
And he was finding that he was getting very arthritic, like his
mm-hmm.
hands were hurting. And you know, tomatoes as being part of the nightshade family.
Yeah.
He found it was really irritating him. He cut the tomatoes out, and within a week, his hands
yeah.
felt better. It was amazing.
Yeah.
He was not very happy about that because he loved the
yeah.
tomatoes, but it really made a difference. And then, you know, he was able to have a tomato occasionally, but not.
Right.
He was ODing on tomato. It was really toxic
right.
for his family. I mean, for his body.
Yeah. No, and that's what
and
happened.
For the
everything.
Whole family.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, not everything is really dose dependent. And so, you know, just, you know, so, like, you know, a lot of people, like, even let's say with like something like gluten, you know, there's like degrees of sensitivity, or, you know, so people could eat some or some dairy. And then once you start eating just too much, it's just too much for the body.
Right.
And so that's what you start to discover. Like, I know for myself, I had to cut out a lot of things to kind of heal some digestive issues. And now I could pretty much eat anything. I just know, you know, I kind of know my limits on different things.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the book, you talk about, you know, many different diets. You talk about the vegan diet is probably, you know, many experts say that's the healthiest, and then you also talk about the paleo diet,
yep.
which emphasizes meat. Where do you stand on that, and, you know, what's your thoughts on that?
Sure. So I've a lot of thoughts on a lot of different levels on that. It all comes back to the whole bio-individuality thing of, you know, what's really right for your body. I think one of the challenges we face in the healthy eating community, if you will, is that people automatically equate being vegetarian or being vegan with being healthy, and that just isn't necessarily true. And I'm not, you know, I was vegan vegetarian for many years. I have a lot of colleagues and friends that are. I'm not anti-vegan or anti-vegetarian in any way whatsoever. I think the problem is that we, like I was saying, is we just quickly equate it with meaning healthy, which it just does not. I mean, you could eat a vegan diet and eat a very unhealthy diet. You could eat a vegetarian diet and eat a very unhealthy diet. And so it can be very healthy, but you could also do it in an unhealthy way, and then you could also do it in a quote-unquote healthy way, and it still not be right for you. Because I've had a lot of clients that, you know, come to me that were vegetarian or vegan, and they just weren't doing well. And then they just started adding some animal products into their diet, and they started doing a lot better. And so, but then I have no people that thrive on a vegan vegetarian diet. And so it really does come down to the individual thing, and then it also comes down to, you know, what are the quality of the food that you're eating as a vegan? Because, I mean, you could still be eating sugar all day and lots of sugar and it being very unhealthy for your body. And so, but on a broader level, and especially from a media perspective, in consciousness, it's automatically, you know, and I think actually I just saw an article, Rahm Emanuel and with the mayor of Chicago, kind of came out and was like encouraging all Chicago citizens to become vegan. And I actually think that, you know, I believe his intention was pure, but I think it's misguided and actually can be harmful for some. And
do you
so
really?
I think that, what's that?
You really think that it could be harmful for people to become vegan?
I do think it can be an unhealthy diet for some people.
Why is that? Well,
because people's bodies have different biochemistries and thrive on different foods. And so, and sometimes if you're eating a certain diet that's not giving you the nutrients you need, your body is not thriving. And so for me, I think the conversation should be more centered around a plant-based diet as the foundation of the diet.
Right.
And that we should be eating a lot of plant-based food. Then yes, moving much more towards a vegan diet, eating animal foods responsibly in the right way, if we need them. So it's not that a vegan diet, again, is bad, it's just that it can potentially be. And so everybody's body is really different.
I think the bottom line, as you were saying, is that whatever diet you choose to eat, the quality of the foods that you're choosing has to be good. And so a lot of sugar is not good for anybody.
And then also a lot of people just say, oh, I'm eating vegan, so I'm healthy, and then they'll just eat, you know, they'll eat tons of cookies and stuff that's vegan and, you know, with a lot of fake foods and chemicals or sugar.
I first became a vegetarian, I say I went on the white diet. I mean, I was 16 years old. I just knew I didn't want to eat animals anymore. And so I cut out animals and I ate the rest of the food that I was eating, which was bagels and pasta and it was not very good. And so, you know, over time, of course, I learned about a healthy diet. It's been a long path for me. But if somebody is going to be eating animal foods, I know in your cookbook you actually talk about mindfulness and moderation. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Of course, sure. So, I mean, I think, you know, I kind of break it down into a couple of different buckets. And so, you know, incredibly important is the quality of the animal foods because they're not all created equal. And so, you know, really focusing on the sourcing, how the animal was raised. So, you know, in simple terms, just making sure the animal is ideally pasture-raised, fed on grass its whole life, exposed to the sun, getting exercise. So the animal itself is healthy, raised as if it would be if it was in nature. More nutrients, and then ultimately better for the human body, better nutrient profile for the human body. And in addition, you're also avoiding a lot of the negatives that you would get from conventionally raised animals. You want to make sure you're avoiding all the excess hormones and the antibiotics and all the different things that, you know, in a lot of ways we don't even know what goes into the feed in the conventional animals. So really understanding this, you know, the source of, you know, where the animals are raised, where is it coming from, the quality of the animal foods. And that, you know, goes from meats to, you know, beef, chicken, dairy, you know, so anything coming from an animal. And then in addition to the quality, you know, the quantity is obviously also important. And some of that goes back to the whole bio-individuality thing, what's right for each person. But you really want to think about it in the quantity in two ways, and that's kind of portion size. And so, you know, you don't need a steak that takes up the whole plate. And so just making sure, you know, the portion sizes are responsible and make sense. And then also, in addition to portion size, kind of the frequency of how often you eat it. So you don't necessarily need to be eating animal foods, you know, three times a day, every day. And so just, you know, making sure that, you're eating it when your body needs it. Because same thing with your husband with the tomatoes. Even if your body needs some animal foods, there's going to be a point where it becomes more harmful than beneficial.
Uh-huh.
And then in addition to the quality and the quantity, it really starts to get into the kind of the preparation methods and the cooking methods and making sure, you know, kind of really making sure you pair your animal foods with vegetables. There was actually just a study that was done, I think it was in Europe, and that the inflammatory effects of the animal foods were eliminated by adding avocado to the meal. So the beneficial effects of the avocado kind of counteracted some of the inflammatory effects from the animal foods. And so making sure you're adding vegetables, making sure you're not overcooking animal foods. When you start to char them, they start to develop carcinogenic compounds. And there's another really good, simple kind of habit to get into is just adding like herbs and spices, which also counteract some of the potential harmful effects. Uh-huh. And, of course, add flavor.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that is, you know, so important, something that I like to focus on is because so many people in this country, I mean, we were raised thinking protein, protein, protein. You need protein. And I think a lot of that was a marketing trend, and, you know, is really false. I don't think people need as much protein as we were raised thinking we need. You know, like you said, the traditional plate when you'd go out to eat, you know, half of it would be the meat, and then a quarter would be the vegetable, and a quarter would be the grain, and that it really should be more like a quarter being the protein, and half being vegetable, and a quarter being the grain.
Exactly. Now, that's typically, if you look at a plate, that would be a simple, good, typical way to recommend it. You know, half being vegetables, a quarter being a good quality protein, and a quarter being a good quality, grain. But I mean, the thing is, like, we kind of, in our minds, we've been trained to think of it as protein, but everything we eat has some combination of protein, fat, and carbs. And
uh-huh.
So, you know, vegetables have protein in them. Obviously, some things just have more, you know, they're just more carbs than protein. You know, some things have more fat than protein or than carbs. So
uh-huh.
Everything has all three. It's just a matter of to what degrees. And so the animal could just happen to have more protein. But we're getting protein in everything we eat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one thing that's really interesting as well, you know, I studied Waldorf education. Part of that is biodynamics, you know, that mm-hmm. was established by Rudolf Steiner. And
yep.
You know, he talks about the protein that you get from vegetables, and it reminds me of homeopathy in a sense. He said, you know, when your body has to work to extract the protein from vegetables, it's like exercising your organs. They have to work so much harder to get that protein out, but it's of such a higher quality, and that eating meat and such high protein foods that your organs become weak because the protein is so readily available, they don't have to work at all to get the protein out of it. And so your organs become sluggish. And, you know, when I think of homeopathy, you know, the more dilution the remedy is, the better it works, you know, because it triggers your body. And,
right.
You know, it just makes me think of that in relation to food. And I think also, you know, one of the things I work with my clients, and I'm so happy that some of my clients now are really asking me to do a day or two meatless a week, which
yeah.
is new. You know, I started with people that were just, you know, meat and potatoes. They were used to that every day, and, you know, weaned them off the meat, got just chicken and fish, and now doing some vegan meals, and it's really great. But I think not enough people know of protein alternatives. You know, that they can substitute for meat. And you get into that a little bit in your book. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the protein alternatives that people can use?
Sure. So, I mean, you know, for me, the best place to go is the plant-based alternatives that are more kind of whole food. So, ideal, you know, beans are a great source. You know, so you were speaking about tofu earlier in your recipe. So, you know, so basically soy is just another bean. So there are a lot of great beans out there. Soy does happen to have a good amino acid profile, and that's partially why it became popular as a meat substitute. But like you mentioned, there are a lot of issues with it. If it's not organic, it's genetically modified. And then, I think it's also sort of a very highly allergenic food, even if it's organic and difficult to digest. So it can be a good alternative, but it, you know, not necessarily always. So just getting used to eating other types of beans mm-hmm. is probably, you know, probably one of the most underutilized foods that we have available to us that are, you know, really highly nutritious, have great source of fiber, great source of protein. After that, you know, I think nuts and nut butters are a great way to get some good quality fats and proteins into the diet. And then... I mean, those really are kind of my favorite protein substitutes.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a huge, I mean, I think there are some, you know, if I have soy, I would go with tempeh, which is kind of a fermented version of soy,
uh-huh.
which is shown to be a little healthier. So, I mean, that's typically what I'll do if I'm, you know, and I'll often just like go days with not having animal foods. And you know, those are typically the way that I'll
uh-huh.
get my protein.
What do you think of seitan?
If someone
doesn't have a gluten problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I think it's, most people don't really still, you know, most people don't still realize that that's what it is, that it is, it's just the gluten, which is the, you know, the protein in wheat. I mean, if you have no gluten problem and you're sure that you have no gluten problem, then obviously it's not a, you know, it's an option.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, I think a lot, I mean, I think it's similar again, going back to your tomatoes with your husband. I think, you know, gluten is one of those things that a lot of people are probably, you know, it's probably sensitive on some level. So if you just start eating a lot of it, so, you know, just because it's so hard to know, I tend to like not make it one of my top recommendations.
Uh-huh. Anyway, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to ask you to recommend or kind of share some of your dietary guidelines that would apply to everybody, okay?
Sure, thank you.
We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere, everyone. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and my guest is Jared Koch. Be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Jared Koch, the founder of Clean Plates, and he just came out with a new cookbook called Clean Plates Cookbook. And it's sustainable, delicious, and healthier eating for every day. And I'm happy to have him with us. Jared, you with us?
I am here.
Great. So when we took our break, I said I wanted to come back and ask you to share with us some dietary guidelines that you feel apply to everybody. I know you say you have a couple precepts that you use as a guide. What are they?
Yep, sure. And so I've been touching on most of them through our conversation. So I broke it down into, I thought a lot about before writing the book, like, you know, how the topic of nutrition is so confusing. And just really trying to organize, you know, from a big picture, like what are really the key things that people, you know, really need to know to have a healthier relationship to food and get on the right track. And so the first, which is really the foundation.
How many are
like
there?
I mentioned. So there are five.
Five, okay.
And so the first, which is really at the core, is this bio-individuality, which is really the context. So it really change, even though it sounds simple, it really changes the way that we've been conditioned to think about food and eating. And so, and as opposed, so it really takes away from thinking about it in terms of just good food, bad food. And, you know, using your tomato example again with your husband, it's like, you know, it's easy to say, oh, tomato, good. Tomato's a good food. And so I eat tomato, it's good. But that it's not, you know, that, you know, as shown in your story, it's not always true. It's not as simple
right.
as that. And so the theory of bioindividuality, and so really trying to find out what's right for your body instead of looking outside is number one. The second one is about quality, and so really focusing on quality of foods. We've been so conditioned and so trained to focus on quantity, on calories, and it's not that calories don't matter, because they definitely do, but in my humble opinion, I would say quality actually matters even more.
Sure.
And so, you know, focusing on eating real food, whole foods, you know, foods that nature intended for us to eat, you know, that, you know, as humans, what we've evolved to eat, what's really right for our bodies. And, you know, just really understanding that just that not all calories are created equal. So it's, you know, a 2,000-calorie diet of soda, which Coke is trying to have you believe otherwise, is different than a, you know, a 2,000-calorie diet of vegetables. And obviously you don't want to do either of those as your diet, but just as an example, you know, different foods have different metabolic effects in your body and affect your biochemistry in different ways, and not all calories are the same. Third is what I mentioned is kind of the plant-based diet, a plant-based diet being the foundation of your diet. And so that doesn't mean you have to be vegan or vegetarian. That just means that a substantial portion of the foods that you eat should be plant-based foods. So just, you know, and simply put, just eating a lot of vegetables, you know, every day, multiple times a day, really getting your intake of vegetables in.
Uh-huh.
And then fourth, if you do eat animal foods, consume them responsibly, like I went into. And then number five is really just to really, you know, kind of correlates with number two with the quality, but just really start to reduce your intake of processed foods, chemicalized foods, artificial foods, especially sugars and poor quality oils. I would say, you know, as two that I tend to highlight. But just, you know, really eating more real foods and reducing your intake of a lot of these chemicals that we're exposed to and kind of, you know, typical processed packaged foods. And again, I think, you know, we're over consuming sugar in, you know, in all its different forms, and it's really becoming more and more clear through research that it's, you know, one of the more harmful things to the body.
Mm-hmm. One chapter you really focus on oils a lot. And that's something that I think people are confused with a lot as to which oils are the best. I mean, you know, it used to be coconut oil was, you know, a horrible oil, and now coconut oil has proven to be one of the better oils. Olive oil is good, but, you know, it has a lower smoke point. So can you share with us some of your knowledge about oils and what choices you recommend?
Sure. Well, you definitely mentioned a few. So I would, you know, I think I do agree with you. I think it's one of the more confusing topics for people, and probably one of the more like less talked about, or under talked about, needs to be kind of highlighted more for people. And so, because oils can actually be helpful to the diet, but it also in poor quality form could be pretty detrimental, and it's probably more problematic than given credit for. And I mean, I think it's great that obviously the trans fats and the hydrogenated oils are starting to get removed from the food supply, because those are probably one of the more harmful substances that exist. But in terms of cooking, we recommended coconut oil because, like you said, it has a very high smoking point. It has some good quality fats to it. You know, some people don't necessarily like cooking with it because of the flavor. You know, it definitely has a certain flavor that'll add to different dishes. So it's from a, you know, pure cooking standpoint, it'll be appropriate for some dishes and not for others. So for a more neutral flavor, we recommended grapeseed oil. And, you know, olive oil, I'll still use olive oil, but, you know, like you're saying, I try to use it more in its raw form, you know, so with like salad dressings or stuff like that. But yeah, I will cook with it once in a while, and just like, you know, at low temperatures. So maybe just to do like quick sautés with some things, just because I like the flavor. And I've had a lot of Italian girlfriends in my past, so I got a condition on olive oil.
I mean, you sauté whether it's chicken cutlets or eggplant cutlets or any of that stuff. It's always sautéed in olive oil.
Right. And so, yeah, and then I think, you know, a lot of, you know, in terms of like some of the more harmful ones, it's just, you know, I think if you stay away from a lot of the packaged, you know, like, you know, the baked goods, a lot of the packaged stuff, you know, the chips and stuff, that's where you're getting a lot of the harmful oils. And, you know, really kind of ties into the whole like omega-3, omega-6 fatty acid conversation, and where like the ratio of omega-6s and omega-3s are really meant to be closer to 1-to-1 in the body, and studies have shown that, you know, Americans are closer to a 20-to-1 of omega-6 to omega-3, and a lot of that is coming from the poor quality oils that we're getting. And so you could change that ratio by adding more and more omega-3s to your diet, or, you know, whether it's through supplementation or food, which is great, but you also want to at the same time be reducing the omega-6. And so you do that by reducing a lot of these poor quality oils and processed foods.
Uh-huh. Now, what I thought interesting in reading the book, you talk about coconut oil as also being an antibacterial, an antiviral, and antimicrobial oil. And I thought that was really interesting, since it's used so much in cooking, where, you know, they might have had poor refrigeration, or you know, same with very spicy foods also have, you know, using red pepper and, you know, spicy foods. And I know, like in India, you know, the food is so spicy, or Mexico, that a lot of those countries have very spicy foods and use coconut oil. And I'm sure that helps people, you know, deal with some of the, you know, conditions that might not have been the most sanitary or whatever.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we can learn a lot by looking to other cultures and what they're doing and other climates, and absolutely.
Yeah. Actually, when you say that, I went to talk two weeks ago at the American Museum of Natural History as part of the Global Kitchen exhibit. And yeah. Marcus Samuelson was there talking about, you know, his roots come from Ethiopia, even though he grew up in Sweden. But he was saying how he goes back to Ethiopia and how we have could learn so much from going to some of these, you know, third world countries where we think we have all this knowledge to teach them. You know, in their traditional ways, they have so much knowledge to teach us.
Yeah.
They have so much we could learn from them in their, not only in their cooking methods, but their appreciation and sacredness around food. And I think that's one thing that, you know, that we don't, you know, appreciate enough is the place and the mental state that you're in when you're eating your food, and also the people who are cooking your food, and you know the energy that they're putting into the food that they cook. And so that's one of the things that I liked about your cookbook and your guide, is that your guide kind of highlighted places where they had a certain consciousness in the kitchen, one would hope. And and you know, your book also brings to light some of the consciousness that goes into sourcing, you know, the best qualities and, you know, making the food work for everybody,
yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think underlying all of this, like I was saying, it's really about our relationship to food. As humans, we have relationships, you know, with everything. We have our internal world, and then we relate, and we relate to money, we relate to food, we relate to other people. And it's and ultimately it's all about raising consciousness, raising awareness, and when we start to heal a relationship with anything, we start to heal a relationship with everything. And so and a food is great, because if, you know, when the more and more you start paying attention, you start to see, you know, where you know where there are issues, where there are challenges, where there are blocks, where there's disconnection, and you know, and that starts to kind of permeate and improve every area of your life. And definitely, you know, I'm a definitely a believer in, you know, that kind of consciousness permeates, you know, into the actual food. And, you know, it's, I don't talk about it that much, but, you know, food has energetic value. There's an energy to different foods. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some truth to that. And I like one of the things that I'll often do is just, you know, simply having gratitude around the meal, just bringing consciousness and gratitude. And, you know, because we're so fast-paced, especially as New Yorkers and just, you know, in our country in general, you know, we just expect, you know, we have these huge supermarkets and there's all this food available, all these restaurants, and so we just take for granted that we have this food, as, you know, but, you know, never really stopping to have gratitude and realizing, like, how many people, how much it took to really get that food to your plate. And it does, it changes, really changes the dynamic of the meal. And I really do believe it changes the biochemistry in your body. You know,
absolutely. I am so with you on that. Even in gratitude for the animal that might have given
yeah.
its life to provide
absolutely.
You with that food. It changes the relationship in a very different way. And it also makes you less wasteful if you
yeah.
appreciate. You know, I mean, waste and food waste has become really prominent in the news. I mean, you know, it's all over the place because we waste 50% of the food that is grown and processed in the world is wasted. And in this country, you know, most of it's in over purchasing and over cooking and throwing out. You know,
yep.
in some of the third world countries, it's more from, you know, not being able to get it from the farm to the store or to a place to be sold, or drought or whatever. But here it's just, you know, it's a consciousness, a wastefulness that really
yeah.
would change a lot if people just had more consciousness and appreciation of what they are eating and, you know, the mindset that comes to it. And you actually have a whole chapter on mindset matters, and I really like that. So share with us some of the recipes in the book. What are some of your favorites?
I'm actually still working through a lot of them. I mean, we had a bunch of recipes. So we did about 120 recipes. About 12 to 15 are contributed by some well-known chefs like Jamie Oliver, Michael Anthony from Gramercy Tavern, who was he just won Best Chef of the Year from James Beard, Mark Forgione, who was like an Iron Chef winner, some other, you know, chefs and restaurants in New York and L.A. that contributed. So those have been a lot of fun to make. And then And then there's so many great recipes. It's really what I like about it is they're very fun. They're very diverse. There's something that I really like, called Kitchen Sink Snack Bars. They make for a great healthy snack, great for kids actually also. So there's really just, there's everything in there. There's vegetarian recipes, vegan recipes. There's recipes, with all different types of animal foods. But we're really, everything, the thought of the ingredients in every recipe has really been, really thoroughly thought through. And so everything is just using high quality ingredients across the board and is also designed to be just, simple to make, but fun and very flavorful and tasty. I think it's just a really practical, great resource.
Well, I'd agree. One of the things I like, you have morning miso soup. I think that's really nice because so often people are thinking you always have to have cereal or a muffin or something sweet or a bagel. And sometimes a savory meal is really nice in the morning.
Especially this time of year.
Yeah, miso soup. You have a kamut and brown rice breakfast bowl, which is nice. But there is also quite a bit of meat in here. So if somebody is, more vegetarian, this might not be the book for them, but there's, they can work around it.
We try to include a lot of vegetarian recipes. And, for us, we're trying to really reach a broad audience and show people, you could move towards, even if you are, you said, you were working with somebody that was a meat and potatoes person. And so we want to reach those people and show them, you could still eat animal foods, but you can move towards a much more a much more healthier lifestyle and way of eating, and still include that. And then over time, whoever that is becomes more aware and will likely start to reduce their intake of animal foods as they become more knowledgeable and educated. And so, we really wanted to create something that really reaches everybody. And then there's also a lot of families and couples that eat different ways. So some, maybe a wife is vegetarian and the husband is not, or vice versa, or a kid.
Absolutely.
And so this really gives you the ability to have something for everybody.
And so what's your focus for Clean Plates coming this year, 2013?
Sure. Great question. So we have the cookbook and we have the restaurant guides where we do full reviews of all the healthiest, tastiest, most sustainable restaurants. We do that in Manhattan and Brooklyn and Los Angeles right now. We have an iPhone app. But our main focus is where we've been starting to produce an email that we're moving towards, a daily email. And it's just a great way for us to kind of stay in touch with our community on a ongoing basis and really the whole idea of it is to be a very practical way to keep people on track, to give them just really good, solid information that's very practical on eating healthier, really bust through a lot of the myths and the confusion that is out there. And then also on a local level, so we'll have a couple of editions. We'll have a general edition for anybody that's anywhere. And then we'll have local editions in New York City, L.A., so really help people implement this way of eating into their lifestyle by finding all the restaurants and other merchants and really make it easier for people.
So how do people get on that email list? How do people get in touch?
Sure. So the easiest way is just go to cleanplates.com and there's a big box at the top and just enter your email. It's free and then you'll start getting it. And it's been great. We've been getting such great feedback on it. And it's just really helpful.
Wonderful. Well, Jared, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing the great work you're doing with Clean Plates. And I hope many of you out there will benefit from signing up with Clean Plates and getting in touch. Remember, if you want to receive my newsletter, you can sign up for mine at www.iegreen.com. And I will be with all of you again next Thursday. Thanks again, Jared, and everybody out there. Have a great rest of the week, and I will see you next week. Have a great one. Bye-bye.